You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/SBO. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome, 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 friend. I'm TK, your tour guide to the past, and you are listening to For the Love of History, the podcast where we talk about world history, women's history, and weird history. Welcome to this week's episode. How are you feeling today? Have you been drinking water? Have you been taking care of yourself? Have you done something to make yourself feel a little human? Like a little stretchy stretch, maybe? I hope you have. I have fallen off the hydration wagon a little bit, and I also have been not keeping a great sleeping schedule, but we're back on the sleeping schedule wagon. We are hydrating ourselves. It's okay. We get back on that train, and we acknowledge the fact that even the high priestess of hydration, as I have just titled myself, can sometimes slack, and that's fine. It's fine. But do you know what's not fine? Do you know what is objectively not okay? We only have three more seasons. No, we only have three more episodes in this season. And then it's the season break. What are we gonna do? Personally, for me, I'm just gonna cry every day until I see you in season 9. But what we can do, what we really can do, is just enjoy every moment of these last few episodes of season 8 before we go on a break. So let's enjoy the episode and bring out Spicy TK for yet another rage-inducing episode, but with a splash of justice. But before we get into our topic today, we have one very important piece of housekeeping, okay? The first and most important and only order of business for housekeeping today is to give a little shout out to a member of the History BFF Club, the dear sweet Avalon, who is a mini delicious donut. Hi, Avalon. How are you? Thank you for listening and thank you for being here. I just wanted to let you know that I too had a lot of problems asking questions in school. Sometimes people would say some really not nice things to me and I would just feel so dumb for asking these quote unquote dumb questions. It took me a long time to be okay with asking questions again and being curious again and letting myself say the weird thing or ask the question that other people thought was not smart. But eventually it did get easier. It's still a little bit tough right now, but I always remind myself that there's probably somebody else out there in my classroom, online, in the group that I'm with that probably wants to know the same thing that I do. And I also realized that asking questions is one of the best ways to understand something. So when you're asking a question, it just means that your brain is getting smarter and smarter. So next time you're in class and you have a question, raise that curious little hand and ask away, dear one. The first few times will definitely be hard, but I promise you it will get easier and easier and more fun to ask questions. I promise that your brain and your classmates will thank you. So remember, dear Avalon, the only dumb question is the one that we don't ask, kiddo. So I hope you stay curious, and I'm sending you all the love and hydration through the power of the internet. And with that, it is time to hop into our time machine and travel to the 1900s, where we are going to meet the women and girls of the Mexican Civil War. So grab your drink and a snack, or settle into the dishes, or your commute to work, wherever you are, and let's get to it. I will not lie, dear one. I had almost zero knowledge of the Civil War / Revolution in Mexico. Nothing past like my AP World History class taught to me almost 15 years ago. And in the several pages long chapter in my textbook that covered the Mexican Civil War, not a one mentioned the women of this war, the soldaderas. So imagine my surprise when I was browsing through the bookmark articles in one of my 20 constantly open tabs on Google Chrome and came across the History Channel article about a group of women that basically single-handedly supported this decades-long war. Sometimes when I'm deep in a hyperlink hole, I will come across a side quest topic and just bookmark it for future TK to look at, and past TK really did me a solid when it comes to this topic, so we thank her for it. What I found in this hyperlink side quest was equal parts awe-inspiring and rage-inducing, as unfortunately many historical events are, but I really think that this is an important topic that deals with both misogyny and taking back power in a seemingly helpless situation. At times, this topic can get a little confusing due to the fact that there were soldadera women on both sides of the Civil War, and las soldaderas played vastly different roles and held very different positions, but no worries, as always, you don't need to be an expert in this topic to fully enjoy and understand this episode, because we're gonna go through it together and we're gonna do some learning. So let's get started with what the heck the Civil War in Mexico was all about. So it was both a civil war and a revolution, so depending on the source, it can be referred to by either name. My explanation will be super brief, and if you'd like to know more, there is, of course, resources in the show notes. So in the late 18, early 1900s, Mexico was run by this dude named Porfirio Diaz, and he was super into industrialization and getting foreign powers to invest in Mexican industry and infrastructure. Mr. Diaz basically said, come on in, guys, I'll give you lots of tax deals and stuff will be great, and you can give us money and it'll be wonderful. America was like, okay, this sounds great. Let me build a bunch of stuff. You also give me a bunch of money and a bunch of other perks for helping you do this. And together, Mexico and America made a bunch of money, which is awesome. Love it. Economy's growing, flourishing, capitalism. Everything was awesome. It was great. People were making lots of money. So why would a revolution start? What's the problem? Well, there was a problem with wealth distribution. So the top 1% of the population, basically the government officials and the military people in power, were the only ones getting any of the money. And then all of the people below that were not receiving any of the financial benefit, even though Mexico was making a whole ton of money. The rich had hopped on the exploitation train and it was fully leaving the station. However, the big no-no inciting incident came when the political and military elites who were making all of the money decided to buy up the ancestral lands of the indigenous farming communities who had lived on that land for countless generations, hence the word indigenous. Okay. This created a situation where these farmers and families were now working for next to nothing on the land that they used to own, making the new landowners, called hacendados, very, very, very wealthy, and the farmers were becoming poorer and poorer. Of course, people started to get angry and began protesting, and Diaz started murdering people who opposed him, which is like rule number one in the great big book of how to not start a war. But Diaz had a death wish, I guess, because he kept on murdering and kept on taking lands of indigenous people. And eventually, you push people far enough, they're gonna revolt. And that's exactly what happened. Now, there are a lot of players in the Mexican Revolution, lots of leaders, but essentially, for our purposes today, all we need to know is that there is the federal government, that side, mostly the rich people of society that were reaping the benefits of foreign money, and the indigenous people of Mexico alongside the people who were not getting any of the money. Tensions rose and things came to a boiling point on November 20th, 1910, when the revolutionaries took up arms and began fighting to overthrow Diaz. The men all grabbed their guns, hopped on their horses, and rode off into the sunset to fight, just like in the movies. And if this was a movie, that's how the rest of the war would go. Brave men on horseback and on foot fighting day in and day out with very macho dialogue and battle scenes. Maybe a map would be thrown on the table and all of these mustachioed or bearded men would be around the table pushing little things around to represent troops, and they'd be doing all their strategy stuff. Then there would be daring scenes and bromances and all of these very heroic war deeds, which is all grand for the movies. But what the movies don't show are the in-between parts. The gathering food, the preparing the food. Maybe they show the eating food, but they definitely do not show the washing of the clothes, the moving of the camps, or the 10 million daily things that need to happen to keep an army fed, clothed, and going. This is where our first group of Las Soldaderas come in. The word soldadera is now synonymous with woman soldier, but the original meaning comes from the word soldada, or soldier's pay, because the men would give their wages to these women to pay for food, meal preparation, clothes, cleaning, and other services that they would provide. The rebel armies were woefully unequipped to provide for an army. There was no food distributors or people in charge of giving soldiers rations or just food in general, let alone sleeping accommodations or medical treatment. All of these jobs fell to their wives, their mothers, their sisters, and their girlfriends. And they weren't just on the rebel side. Soldaderas could be found on the side of the Federalists as well, but in smaller numbers. The role of these women and women like them from the Greek Wars to modern time are far too often forgotten or minimized. But without them, there is no way that armies, small or large, would be able to move quickly, stay fed, and stay relatively healthy. These soldadera women, sometimes pregnant, more often than not with their children in tow, would source food, which meant going out, sometimes in the desert, for hours to forage, then cook that food, clean the camps, wash bloody clothes, be impromptu nurses and doctors and healers and morale keepers. Then after all that, they would pack up the camps, unpack the camps, carry all the supplies, often going before the soldiers to set up camp. And I'd like to remind you that they were doing this sometimes while pregnant, more often than not, with children in tow, which is mind-blowing to me. And I know some garbage humans would say something like, well, isn't that what they were doing at home, just cooking and cleaning? It's not a big deal. And to them, I would say, I appreciate your question, but not the attitude nor the spirit with which the question was asked. And then I would tell them how during this time, women were not considered citizens in Mexico. They were exclusively property, and that was all women. Afro-Mexicans, indigenous Mexicans, and even the elites were not considered citizens. So the life of a soldadera provided an opportunity for them to not only make their own money and on the side of the revolutionaries fight for a chance to change their circumstances, it was also a break from the norm, a break from tradition, and a small slice of autonomy. They were able, often for the first time, to control their life and control what they did and control their actions. There was no way these women could fight politically because they weren't allowed. This is where many people, myself included, forget that these small acts of defiance build and build like dandelions popping out through the concrete. A choice here, an action there, they all build up, and eventually, when a big rebellious action happens, the concrete just splits open.
So, have you ever thought about what would happen if your airline window popped out? Or if you could build a jetpack using only machine guns? Turns out you can, but you really, really shouldn't. Hi, I'm Jill Chacha, host of a podcast that's for weird people who like learning about weird stuff. It's called, well, That's Interesting, and it's a comedy science-y show that tells the story behind the facts because those stories are funny. Every Thursday, I tell the tale behind an odd new discovery, like how researchers found two mysterious structures surrounding Earth's core, or how it's actually possible to stop hiccups using a rectal massage. Yes, there's a story behind that. No pun intended. And I tell the story because storytelling is the perfect way to learn and remember. The facts are bizarre, the stories are epic, and the laughter is plentiful. So, join the flock and listen to Well, That's Interesting wherever you do podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/SBO. Terms and conditions apply.
War times create this very unique bubble of feminism out of necessity that I find fascinating. In World War I, women took to traditionally male, air quote, positions in unprecedented numbers to keep up the war effort at home. And in World War II, the iconic Rosie the Riveter was created to promote the same idea. Rosie may be the most iconic symbol of this phenomenon, but she is by no means alone. Countless wars all over the world have required this type of action, this breaking the gender norms. And women in many capacities have answered the call, like our soldaderas supporting the soldiers and the soldaderas fighting alongside the men and often commanding them. It is impossible to know how many women took to the battlefield during the Mexican Revolution for a few reasons. First, they would often dress as men for practical and safety reasons, some even changing their names. And secondly, their stories were purposefully minimized and covered up. But let's have the good news before we have the bad, shall we? Soldadera fighters joined for many reasons, just like the soldadera supporters, which is not an official term. I just made it up to help me stay organized in my brain. We got the supporter soldaderas and we got the fighter soldaderas, just so you know. On both sides of the fight, some women pulled a Mulan and went in place of their brothers or their fathers or their sons. Others joined in hope that they could fight for their right to be considered citizens. And others sought revenge for fallen family members. And even though we will never know the exact number, they must have come out in Valkyrie-like droves, because even the New York Times reported on these women fighters in their November 3rd, 1913 issue, reporting on three individual soldadera fighters and 500 soldadera supporters. 500. Crazy. And I'm going to read part of that article right now to you this moment. When less than a month ago, the Federal Army of General Mas occupied the Constitucionalist provincial capital at Piedras Negras, soldaderas played an important part in the bloodless capture. A small group of them pitched their tents on the overlooking hills 2 days before the soldiers arrived. When the army came, fully 500 of these soldier women accompanied the troops, most of them guarding the wagon trains, which their skills as foragers had supplied. After the city was occupied, the women spread food for their entire army in the plaza. The soldaderas are expert with both knife and rifle. A small group of 500? What? If 500 is small, what's a big group? What would a big group of soldaderas be? This is amazing. The rest of the article goes on to describe a wife who rode through enemy troops to fight alongside her husband, and a mother who sneaky snuck her way into a federal jail by herself, killing two guards, and then broke her son out of jail once again by herself. And I heard being a mom gives you superpowers, but I had no idea to the extent that it gave you superpowers. And after this episode, I'm going to call my mom and ask her if she would break me out of federal jail. And if she doesn't, I will be very sad. But I digress. While this is really super freaking cool, it frustrated, I'm so frustrated I can't even speak. It frustrated me beyond belief that we don't know the names of these women. We only know a handful of the names of these soldadera. And there are reasons for this, which we will talk about later. Trust me. But first, let us learn about the soldadera baddies we do know by name. Our first battlefield baddie is Angela Jimenez, who went by the masculine version of her name, Angel, while fighting. She disguised herself as a man when she first decided to fight alongside her father, and after federal troops raided their village, she became an explosives expert, which is really stinking cool, and really created a reputation as a fearless fighter. Eventually, she revealed her identity after solidifying her position as a really badass warrior, and she came out in the most hilarious way by telling everybody that if they try any funny business, if they even think about seducing her, she will shoot them. She was not having any of it, because Angela was not here for romance. She was here for righteous vengeance. For years, she fought the federal troops with her identity as a woman on full display, making sure everybody knew that she was fighting for her freedom and the liberation of Mexican women. Our next soldadera is Petra Herrera, who also pulled a Mulan and dressed as a man until her reputation as a certified baddie was established. While she was dressed as a man, she went by the name Pedro and absolutely smashed it. She killed it. She was so cool. She climbed the ranks. While she was dressed as a man, she went by the name Pedro, doing the same thing as Angela, rising in the ranks, establishing her position so people would take her seriously, which makes me sad. You shouldn't have to hide who you are to get respect. Hate that. But happy for her that she eventually became so powerful, so badass, had such an amazing reputation that she just started growing out her hair. And then she started wearing feminine clothes and was just like, yep, yeah, by the way, I am a woman. And people got upset. Her coming out as a woman was not very well received among the higher ranking individuals. Namely, this one guy who was in charge of a group of revolutionaries who was like trying to be the next president. And I will not say his name because he is a garbage human and they do not deserve recognition. So we'll just call him Captain Garbage Human, okay? Captain Garbage Human was very upset because during a very pivotal siege in this war, Petra, who was now fully out as a woman, was in charge of the scene, and many say that she played the most pivotal role in making this siege successful. And he was pissed and did not want to give her credit because he was a gross woman hater. And without skipping a beat, Petra was like, all right, don't give me credit. I'm out of here. Deuces. I'm going to make my own all-women's troop and be in charge of that and go somewhere else where I'm wanted. And that's exactly what she did. She gathered a bunch of women together, made some fighting soldaderas, and went to another revolutionary leader. They were on the same side, but she just went to a different leader and was like, hey, this guy sucks. Can I fight with you? And this guy was like, yeah, of course. You're super badass. Why wouldn't I want you on my team? And that is exactly what she did. Both of these women started out the war pretending to be men for safety and to avoid misogyny. But there was another soldadera that used this revolution as an avenue for transition. Emilio Robles Aviela was assigned female at birth and presented as a woman until the revolution started. Even before they began fighting, Emilio grew up riding horses and slinging guns, so they were quick to rise in the ranks and even became a colonel in the legionary cavalry. And for the non-military delicious donuts out there, including myself, a colonel means that they were like super high ranking and in charge of a lot of people, but they were like not the top. I think there's like two other ranks that are above them. I don't remember, but they were in charge of a lot of people and they were very important. So Emilio became a colonel and it was great. They had a good time. They got lots of awards. They did a lot of great things. And even after the war, he lived out the rest of his life as a man, making him one of the first recognized trans men in Mexican history, which is super cool. We love that for Emilio. He was an absolute trailblazer. All three of these soldaderas were trailblazers, and without them in the Mexican Revolution, there is no way either side would have been able to sustain such a long war if it were not for them. And even though we don't have the names of other soldadera, there are countless soldadera colonels that were in the Revolutionary Army. They were in charge of other soldiers, not just women, but men and women. So why do these women not have a giant freaking monument built to honor them in the center of Mexico? Why are they not in the textbooks? Why have they not covered in history class? Why has their story been neglected? My textbook contained very cool pictures of revolutionary fighters with incredible handlebar mustaches. Just incredible. They had their bullet belt thingies across their chest, and they had neat hats, and they looked really cool. And that badassery translates into many Westerns that I watched or was forced to watch with History Dad on the weekends. They were rough, they were tumble, they were rebel fighters of the Mexican Revolution. But when their lady comrades came on screen, they lacked that rugged, war-worn feel. They looked like they had just stepped out of a salon and then stumbled into video game bikini armor with a Western mod. They had ripped blouses, red lips, and they were dripping with promiscuity. That is how the soldadera have been honored in media, from movies to music and much more. And this is not accidental. It wasn't gradual. It was purposeful and planned. Even before the war was over, Corridor war ballads were being created about soldadera. And ballads might not sound like that big of a deal, but these corridors were songs that immortalized the stories and would relay information and histories about important figures and events. They were oral histories. Tunes are catchy. They stay in people's brains. So even though they're just songs, they create realities. One incredibly fearsome and famous soldadera, Valentina Ramirez, inspired the corridor La Valentina. And in this song, not once, not a single frickin' time does this song mention a single one of her many battlefield accomplishments? The dude who wrote the song just talks about how much he wants to get with her because she's so hot. That's it. So now this memory, this collective memory that has been created about Valentina is about how hot she is and not about all of the cool things that she did. And more people know this Valentina lady, super sexy. Not this Valentina lady, she led a bunch of people into battle and just like killed it on the battlefield, which sucks. It sucks so hard. And maybe you're thinking, TK, calm down, first of all. It's just one song. Maybe it was a mistake. Maybe, you know, he didn't mean to objectify and sexualize her. Maybe it was an accident. He just really liked this lady and he didn't do it on purpose. And you're right, I do need to take down a notch or two. And I wish I could tell you that that's true, that it was just a little silly mistake, little accident. However, it was not. It was a conscious decision and a joint effort by the government, because the government did not want to acknowledge women's participation in the revolution for the dumbest reasons. Like, I'm talking, I feel less smart now knowing the reason why they wanted to diminish and hide the story of the soldaderas. That's how dumb this is. And the two reasons they decided to do this was money and fragile masculinity. First of all, in terms of money, the government didn't want to pay women veterans of the war, so they reinforced the idea that women only did domestic things, which, as you and I very well know, are very important. It's not just domestic things. It's domestic things. Doing domestic things are how we have gone from, you know, living in caves to living in a society, okay? Okay, domesticity is important, but I will digress, all right? I'm getting upset. So, they did this. They minimized their job in order for them to not have to pay the same wages or any wages at all that they were paying their male counterparts. That lady, Valentina Ramirez, who had the whole song written about her, received much less money than the dudes that fought for her, that she was in charge of, and she lived in poverty for the rest of her life. And this was not a one-off situation. Many other soldaderas had the same thing happen, all because the government did not want to pay them their fair share. And in addition to being absolute cheapskates, the government and many military leaders were also shooketh down to their little boots about how badass these ladies had been, and their masculinity apparently wet itself and ran away. And in order to get it back, they twisted the narrative, and through media, especially movies and music, like I said before, they turned these fearsome soldadera into hypersexual but easily manipulated trollops. Men were able to keep their masculinity and dominance. The image was solidified and the fearsome warriors were gone. But it would get much worse before it got better. Soldadera were hypersexualized and objectified, and this image made its way to Hollywood and took on a whole new icky, gross, yucky, hate it life. Hollywood created a stereotype of not only Mexican women, but also Mexican men, the country, and society as a whole. Once again, the women were strong, but only in direct proportion to their sexiness. If you were not smoking hot, you were nothing. And at first, these sexy ladies would be aggressive and tough against the uncultured and uncivilized men in their bleak one-horse town with a brothel next to a church and only one sheriff in the whole area. But as soon as a white dude hero came to town, she would be like putty in his hands, and the men would be put in their place. This was the standard movie pattern for years, and these stereotypes continue to color many people's perspectives, which is so incredibly damaging. However, the story doesn't end in tragedy, dear one. Nay, nay. The Soldaderas may have lived in the promiscuous shadows for years, but in 1970, something incredible happened. In 1970, during the Chicanx movement, an all-female Mexican-American civil rights group named themselves after these incredible women. And they owned the seductive nature of the soldadera. They didn't push it aside. They weren't like, we reject the sexiness. Nay, nay, they embraced it, saying, we can be both. We can be super sexy and also kick your ass. Like, these two things are not mutually exclusive. And also, just because we're absolute smoke shows does not mean that you can invalidate our personhood and objectify us. Our sexiness is our own, and it has nothing to do with you. Which I love, because, yeah, looks and human rights are not mutually exclusive. The hotter you look, the more valid you are not. This is not, that is, these two things do not go together. And I feel like I shouldn't have to say this, but here we are. You are not more or less moral because of your looks. You are not more or less smart because of the way you look. You are not more or less in control of your own body because of the way you look. You have ownership of the way you look and the way you conduct yourself. And you always, always deserve respect, no matter what. And from this pivotal moment in 1970, Mexican and Mexican-American women have been reclaiming their history by writing books, creating art, movies, music, and so much more. And if I've said it once, I've said it a million times. This is why diverse perspectives in history, in education, in art, in literally everything we do are so important. And because of these women's effort, the legacy of the Soldadera live on in its original glory and badassery. Well, dear one, we have come to our final thought. And our final thought for today is a bunch of book recommendations for this topic. So I've got three. So I don't know if that is considered a bunch. How many is in a bunch? Is it five? It feels like five. So I guess I have three. I have three recommendations for you to further your journey, your learning journey with this topic. So we've got the book Las Soldaderas, Women of the Mexican Revolution by Elena Poniatowska. Then we have Soldaderas in the Mexican Military, Myth and History by Elizabeth Salas. And finally, not finally, we've got Revolutionary Women of Texas and Mexico, Portraits of Soldaderas, Saints and Subversives. And this is like a collection of different pieces into one book. So there's like a bunch of different authors. And this one is really cool. I like that one a lot. And then now, finally, so I guess I have four, so we're one closer to a bunch. And this is the book that I used the most in researching this episode. So it's called Mexico's Nobodies, The Cultural Legacy of the Soldadera and Afro-Mexican Women by Christine Arc. And there's also a really awesome talk that she gives about writing this book, and I will put that in the show notes as well. These books are absolutely wonderful. I highly recommend them, and you can get them probably through your library. And if you can't, request it from your library and continue your learning journey, dear one. Happy reading. Well, my delicious little donut, that is all she wrote. Thank you for joining me in this episode today. We gotta soak up every minute of our history BFF time that we possibly can before the end of this episode. Nope, the end of the season. If you did enjoy soaking up the For the Love of History love with me, and you think other people would enjoy this, consider sending this or any episode to your friend or your enemy. And, you know, if there is a garbage human in your life that you think needs conversion, send them this episode and, you know, let them be converted into a history lover and a little bit less of a garbage human. You can also support the podcast by leaving a rating or review. We are like, we're working on our 200 reviews goal. And as of recording this episode, we've got, I think, 148. So that's really cool. I would love to have 200 by the end of the year or by the end of season 9. That would like be like most ideal. But you know, keeping our goals realistic. And you know what? If we do reach 200 reviews, I would love to do a bonus episode to celebrate. That would be wonderful. We could do a little bonus episode. It'll be so great. And finally, another way that you can support the podcast is through Patreon. Patreon members are the ones who keep the lights on here at For the Love of History. And by supporting For the Love of History, you get bonus content, which is super duper cool. So come on over there, join us. And also, August is coming soon, okay? And you know that in Japan, August is spoopy season. So if you need some yokai gear, you can head on over to the merch store and get yourself some incredible yokai merch so that you're ready for the spooky season, okay? And then we can be spoopies together. And I love twinning. It's like my favorite thing in the whole world. So with that, I hope that you have an absolutely fantastic rest of your day, your night, your whatever. Enjoy the week. Go outside. Do something that makes you happy. Touch some grass. Hug an animal. But like a domesticated animal, not just a squirrel or something. I don't want you to get rabies. Drink your water. Let's take a little sippy sip together. The Hydration High Priestess is here. Once again, we're back. And with that, I will say adieu. And I will see you next week when we have a special guest interview. It's our last one of the season. And I'm very excited about it. So I'm just stalling now because I don't want to leave you. But you've got things to do. I've got things to do. I gotta edit this episode. So I guess I gotta say goodbye. And I love you. And I will see you next week. Okay, see you later. Love you. Bye.
Why is there a metronome right now? Okay.
Do you love history but hate when it's stuffy and boring? Well, look no further and join me, Katie Charlwood, your friend, the neighborhood social scientist and reader of books, as I delve into unsolved historical mysteries, murders by gaslight, and of course, women who have been misrepresented through all time. On Who Did What Now, the history podcast that's not your history class. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.